Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From KQED.
Heather, this is where we're going to get busted for saying something stupid.
Okay.
Yeah, our producer protects us from lawsuits generally. This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. San Francisco has long been a beacon for liberal politics and social causes. But lately, a steady diet of viral videos of car break-ins and smash-and-grabs have put the city on something of a mid-course correction. Plus, the recalls of progressive district attorney Chesa Boudin and three members of the San Francisco School Board, along with the recent passage of measures bolstering police powers and requiring drug screenings, have added to a sense that something is shifting in San Francisco. A recent profile by New York Times San Francisco bureau chief Heather Knight of Gary Tan, the controversial leader of a well-known venture capital firm in the Bay Area, put a focus on some of the money behind this push to the middle, and she joins me here in the studio. Hey, Heather.
Hey, good to be here.
So good to have you here. And also with us, one of your, you know, former pals from the Chronicle, Joe Garofoli, who's been reporting on an attempt to move the Republican Party, God help us, in San Francisco toward more moderate positions. Joe, good to have you with us as well.
Good to be back. Wait, when you say former pal, we're still pals.
You're still pals. That's
just the
right.
Come on now. Part is former. Come
on. Exactly.
And yeah, former coworkers.
I just have to say that, you know, the political knowledge we have here is eclipsed by no one, okay? I had to throw in an eclipse reference.
Very nice.
All right. Heather, let me begin with you. Gary Tan, who is he? And why did you decide to write a profile?
So he's the CEO of Y Combinator, a startup for San Francisco companies, including Instacart, DoorDash, Reddit. He trains people to go through this program and emerge, hopefully funded by venture capitalists and on their way to superstardom.
So a wealthy guy, but he pushed back when you called him a billionaire.
He's only a centimillionaire, which apparently means he has hundreds of millions of dollars, although he wouldn't say how many hundreds.
Okay. Well, we're assuming it's nine or fewer. And I want to play a little clip of him. He, of course, became, I would say, notorious back in January when he put a tweet out at midnight. He was drunk, and he went after some of the supervisors. I want to get to that in a second, but let's give a little bit of what he sounds like. And here he is from a YouTube clip that he posted talking about sort of technology.
Self-driving cars were born in San Francisco. Companies like Cruise and Waymo are creating something that will literally save lives. But some San Francisco politicians hate technology so much, they're literally willing to make up statistics, lying to the public to justify banning them.
So, Heather, that's Gary Tan. Give us a sense of, you know, other than, you know, his voice, like, what's he like when you meet him? Because he has taken on this persona of some big, you know, sort of imposing person.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that because I'd never met him before getting this assignment from my editors. And all of the supervisors who he's famously gone after on Twitter said they'd never met him either. He really is in his own little tech corner of San Francisco, and most people that I've encountered have never met him in person. So I was expecting this angry, bombastic guy like he comes across on social media, but actually he seems to be a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde. He's definitely angry on X, formerly Twitter, but in person he just seems like a regular dad.
Yeah, that's like a lot of people on social media. They're sort of hiding behind that quasi-anonymity. And Joe Garofoli, what is your take on what Gary Tan and his, you know, tech bros, what do they want politically?
They want what a lot of the other people, more centrist folks in San Francisco want. They want the city to work. And they're frustrated that it doesn't in many ways. They put a lot of money towards candidates who are in the YIMBY camp, who want to build housing of all types across the city. And that's where they're focusing a lot of their political activity right now.
And Heather, as you point out in your piece, he has given a lot of money, not just recently, but going back, you know, almost a decade to people like London Breed. He also supported the recall of Chesa Boudin. So he's been dabbling in politics, but it seems like it's ramping up recently. Is that fair to say?
Well, I looked back at the records and he started donating in 2015. I think Ed Lee was one of his first recipients of cash, but that was just a little bit. He got much more involved when the pandemic hit and there was so much frustration with the district attorney and school board. And those were his first big commitments. He told me about listening to a Clubhouse meeting on Twitter and kind of getting interested in, like, who are these people?
What Clubhouse is one of these social platforms.
Yeah, an audio listening. You can listen to meetings via X on Clubhouse. And he listened to one of those and got interested, started meeting people in real life, as they say, and started funding. The recall of Chesa Boudin was his first big effort.
Well, I wonder, you know, how do people who listen to him, like that little clip we heard, he talked about Cruz, and I think Y Combinator was an investor in Cruz at some point. How do we know whether or not he has conflicts of interest, does it matter?
Well, so far he's funding the recalls and efforts like to boost police power. I did not look at, you know, whether Cruz would have something to do with that. But so far, it seems like he's trying to keep the politics separate from what he's doing at Y Combinator.
And Joe, you said that he kind of is just reflecting the sort of this emerging center in San Francisco politics, as we saw with the last election, the passage of a ballot measure to do drug screening for people who get public assistance and also one to boost police power. I mean, do you see him sort of leading this kind of thing with his donations, or is he just reflecting what so many people are feeling?
I think most important, he's funding. And that's why one big reason why we saw the moderate group take over the DCCC and
Democratic and Central Committee.
Democratic Central
County.
Committee, thank you. Of the folks who do the nominated, to do the endorsements, which is a very key role, but overlooked. Something funny here. Here's the another effect that Gary Tan has. Aaron Peskin, who is now a mayoral candidate here in San Francisco, and you know, he said two decades ago he wouldn't have been considered a progressive, and now he generally is. And he said, he told us, in the old sphere, I was a moderate. What the Gary Tans of the world have done is normalize far right wing behavior and change what the definition of a moderate is. And so what many progressives in San Francisco do, they paint the Gary Tans of the world as far right-wing extremists, whereas Heather wrote about in her great piece, is he's sort of a centrist Democrat. He's sort of a Biden Democrat, right, Heather?
Yeah, he wants public schools. He was raised in poverty in Fremont, and public schools there.
Parents were immigrants, I think.
Right, really pushed him to excel. He learned how to code really early on, was getting jobs, internships at local computer companies in his teens, and went to Stanford. Says that the quality of the public schools pushed him to go as far as he could, whereas he doesn't think that's happening here in San Francisco public schools.
What does he think, and I don't know if you asked him this, but what do you think he makes of what Joe just said, that he's being sort of presented as this right-wing, you know, boogeyman?
Right. I think both sides are doing that to each other here in San Francisco, painting the other as, you know, devil incarnate. Whereas if you look compared to the national political spectrum, we're all quite close together here in San Francisco.
And the 50 shades of blue.
Right. The littlest differences are really blown up for political theater in a lot of ways.
And there was that infamous, you know, drunken tweet at midnight back in January where he said F several members of the Board of Supervisors. Does he own that? Does he apologize for it? I mean, I'm sure you asked him about it.
Oh, yes, I did. He deleted it. He apologized. I could tell he was really squirmy and red-faced when I asked him about it. I think he knows that was such a stupid, you know, self-own, just a dumb thing to do.
Unforced error.
Yes, for anyone, let alone a prominent tech CEO who already half the city doesn't like. That didn't help anything. So I noticed when I covered him at a political fundraiser, he wasn't drinking alcohol. I think he's laying off that for a while.
But he certainly isn't laying off Twitter and X.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
I was just looking. He's like on there constantly.
Yes. He has not removed the angry Gary Tan from Twitter, that's for sure.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our conversation, and we're going to take a look at moderation from the other end of the political spectrum and what the San Francisco Republican Party is doing or trying to do. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions, online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with New York Times San Francisco Bureau Chief Heather Knight and senior politics reporter Joe Garofoli from the San Francisco Chronicle. Joe, I do want to ask you about your reporting on the Republican Party. But Heather, I do want to ask you one more thing about Gary Tan, which is he, in addition to going after sort of the progressive members of the Board of Supes, he often attacks the media in very personal terms. And I'm wondering if you felt that at all in, you know, some of the things you've done over the years, and if you asked him about it. His hostility to the media.
He's infamous for blocking tens of thousands of people on X, including many journalists, some of whom have never written about him or interacted with him. And so, of course, you know, that gets my curiosity piqued. I have not been blocked by him, but he kind of also got sheepish when I asked him about that and said sometimes he's hand-blocking people, other times he is using some sort of automated bot. And I asked him, well, what would get you a block? And he didn't really answer that fully either, so he needs to work on some of his answers.
Or some of his tweets, or both. Do you think in some ways, and I think you alluded to this in your piece, that I think his dad was an alcoholic or had a drinking problem.
Right.
I mean, do you feel like he acknowledges that maybe that's part of all this, or is it really bigger than that? And if, you know, stone cold sober, he'll be the same way, more or less.
Well, he did acknowledge that his dad had a big alcohol problem, and then that contributed to a rough childhood where he said his mother had to work two jobs to support the family and would feed them expired bread she got from a nursing home where she worked. So pretty grim. And he did, you know, acknowledge that he was drunk when he made those threatening tweets and isn't drinking alcohol right now. So.
All right. Well, let me pivot. And Joe, you did a piece about moderation from the other side of the spectrum. The Republican Party, which is, let's be clear, not a powerhouse in San Francisco. We're about, what, 7% of the registered voters are Republican. But lo and behold, you profiled a local Republican, Jay Donde, who founded something called the Briannas Society, very high-minded sounding group. Tell us about him and what he's trying to do.
They're trying to do a similar thing to what Democrats did in this last election, and that's, you know, become more centrist. And they are saying there's a lot of voters in San Francisco who open up the left side of the ballot and see like, oh, everybody here is their ideas don't align with mine. They're all virtue signaling, blah blah blah. They're spending time, you know, focusing on the renaming of schools, et cetera, et cetera. But the other side is, you know, talking about how space lasers are creating wildfires and too extreme on the other side. So they want to run candidates who are interested in making, as we said earlier, making San Francisco work, having They want to do things like double the size of the police department, and they're very concerned on public safety, public education, many of the similar things that we're hearing from the centrist Democrats. Now, the difference is that for this crew, you know, one of the things that Democrats use to sort of disqualify Republican candidates is to say, oh, they're all about Trump. This crew are all about, they're all anti-abortion, they're all anti-LGBTQ. This crew tries to stay away from those hot button issues in some ways.
But it's hard when you're, you know, you've got a party in San Francisco, even where 63% of the Republicans voted for Trump.
Absolutely.
So do people even want what they're selling?
Well, that's the challenge they have, is that they, you know, they can take over their version of the Central Committee that does endorsements here. But, you know, traditionally the Republican Party here has been very conservative, and if not super into Trump, they do, the voters here support him. They tried not to talk about Trump, even though, and you know, but their money comes from an anti-Trumper, someone who was on the No Labels, Martha Conti. She's a national vice chair at No Labels, and she gave them pretty much half the money for their PAC that propelled all these folks to victory this year.
You know, Heather, in Sacramento, a lot of the, you know, the Republican Party also is on the outs. They, you know, the Democrats have a supermajority in both houses. Obviously, all the statewide officials are Democrats. And so in some ways, Mod Dems, moderate Democrats, have become a proxy for Republicans. You know, they get funded by business interests, and sometimes they vote that way on a number of issues. I mean, do you have a sense that here in San Francisco, that's kind of what's happening with people like Mark Farrell, you know, investment banker kind of guy running, former supervisor running for mayor, and, you know, Breed running to the right? I mean, is that kind of a San Francisco version of that?
It seems like it. It seems like people on both sides in San Francisco are moving towards the middle. I think people are tired of the polarization. And, you know, if, you know, somebody with deep pockets is looking for a candidate to support here who can actually get elected and get things done, the moderate Democrat would be the logical choice.
Yeah, but you know, Joe, it seems that even if you aren't a Republican, if you have taken money from a Republican, you've been endorsed by a Republican, you said, you know, a Republican has said nice things about you, that's going to end up in a mailer in a San Francisco voter's mailbox during election time, right? I mean, it is the scarlet letter.
It is. And so this group they see the path to relevance. We're not even saying victory. We're saying sort of relevance through San Francisco has 118,000 no party preference voters. Now, most of those people are not Republicans in waiting. Many of them are no party preference. So they think the Democrats are too conservative. But they think there's about 40,000 conservative no party preference voters there and about 20,000 persuadable conservative Democrats in San Francisco. They think they can use this crew to those voters to maybe steal a seat on the community college board, or, you know, on the school board. Maybe it's a long road. It's a long road. But some of these people also come from the tech center, and they know and have run across the people from your Grow SFs and your Abundant SFs. In their day job in the tech world. So a lot of these folks are coming from the same sort of places.
Heather, I'm wondering if you talked with Gary Tan or any other techies that you've talked to over the last several months. How do they feel about being branded as kind of like Republican light in a way, at least by San Francisco standards? I mean, would they disagree with the party? I mean, are they, you know, do they, if you go down the litany of progressive issues, are they for gun control? Are they for immigration rights? Are they for gay rights? That kind of thing?
Yeah, that really came to light during the recalls, and a lot of the people that were backing the school board members and the district attorney were labeling any opponents, including Gary Tan and his tech colleagues, as Republicans, Trump lovers. They use the phrase dark money a lot. And that angered, of course, the others who were like, we can look at my voter registration. I'm a Democrat. You know, all the things you just said, they believe in, as far as I've learned, definitely not all. But the people who have stuck around San Francisco to raise their kids generally do have fairly liberal beliefs on social issues. So I think they just think it's out of left field and kind of a desperate measure.
You know, in this, you know, we have a very lively, what's going to be a very lively mayor's race in San Francisco. Gary Tan has endorsed London Breed. And I'm just wondering, like, and again, I don't know if you talked to him about this, but, you know, a lot of people would say, well, all these problems have existed and have gotten worse while she has been mayor. So what's the case for giving her another 4 years? But he's supporting her.
Yeah. He didn't quite explain that very well either. But he and his allies definitely blame the Board of Supervisor for everything that's ever gone wrong in San Francisco. They're very easy foils, very easy targets. Like I said, they're just coming at each other, whether founded or not, in a lot of these cases. And, you know, London Breed has been in power for a long time, and these problems happened under her mayorality. So it's, you know, they just say the Board of Supervisors are the root of all of our problems, even though she runs all the departments and makes most of the commission appointments.
Yeah. Well, I'm old enough. Go ahead, Joe. Yeah.
I was going to say, we're going to hear this in the mayor's race. We're going to hear it from Peskin and Asha Safai, and they're going to say this is the billionaire class taking over San Francisco. The billionaires running elections. You can say that, and it's a legit argument at some point. But we've now seen evidence. You know, the school board recall, the Boudin recall. Voters may agree with that, but that's not going to sway them. In terms of what, because the billionaires wanted to recall Jason Boudin, and they wanted to recall the school board, and that happened. And that was, the billionaires may have funded it, but San Francisco voters, San Francisco Democrats, cast the ballots there.
Well, and of course, we have ranked choice voting in San Francisco. Are you sensing, either one of you, that somebody like a Gary Tan might put together some kind of a slate so that the three most moderate candidates are ranked 1, 2, 3. I know London Breed has kind of been resisting that, maybe because she's not quite sure how it would affect her ultimately. Joe, any sense of that?
Well, yeah, we wrote about this in the Chronicle on Monday, and about the there's a couple different strands happening. One is the anybody but Peskin coalition that's coming up. The problem with including Breed in a ranked choice voting slate is that nobody wants to be with her, and she's going to have trouble finding a partner there because, let's face it, she's very unpopular, as the polls will show, and you know, you don't want to be aligned with that. And then you know, it's probably going to be a Lurie and Farrell forming some sort of alliance, but you know, even that is fraught at some level.
Yeah, what do you think, Heather, about this sort of ranked choice, how that scrambles everything?
Only Mark Farrell so far is fully on board this idea. Daniel Lurie and London Breed are not really going there yet. But I think it's funny just thinking about the wealth in the city that the person who's the outsider candidate, I'm using air quotes, people can't see it.
Yes, I see your air quotes.
On Zoom, kind of.
Is Daniel Lurie, who, you know, is an heir to the Levi Strauss fortune. He literally is from a billionaire family, and he's the one who's like, I'm the outsider.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's just such a strange topsy-turvy race. I think it's going to be fun to cover.
Really fun to cover. Well, I want to just ask you, Heather, you, of course, covered City Hall for so many years for the Chronicle, and you were, I think, famous, well-known for kind of uncovering problems in the city. A couple that come to mind, the million-plus-dollar toilet.
It's finally installed,
probably for less than a million, thanks to your reporting. There was also the, you know, much more serious story about this serial harasser, stalker of women who, was never prosecuted, and I think now he's in prison,
he's in
right?
Prison.
He's in state prison. So I'm wondering, you know, a lot of the reporting you did, you know, for the Chronicle, I would say maybe put a harsher light on San Francisco, not necessarily unfairly so, but do you feel now that you have a national voice with the New York Times that you either see the city differently or want to report on it differently?
A little bit. They're not going to be interested in the nitty gritty of
toilets.
Every little toilet that gets installed. So I have to think of it more from a national and international perspective. What would be interesting for everyone to read about San Francisco? But I very consciously did make my first byline with the New York Times, you know, the story about San Franciscans being tired of people saying, are you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Because living here, we all know that, you know, there are major problems and bureaucracy is right up there. But it's still, I think, the most beautiful city in the world. Endless fun to be had.
Yeah.
Nature.
Yeah, I mean, there's this criticism of New York, especially, not necessarily the Times. But, I mean, the Times for many years, I think, never covered Staten Island or Queens. You know, now they're a little better about that. But, you know, do you have a sense that they want stories that break the stereotype of California, the kind of, you know, fruits and nuts kind of thing?
So far, they've been very open to my pitches, and they trust me and my colleagues around the state to suggest the best ideas and usually go for them.
Yeah. She's not going to say anything that jeopardizes her job, is what I'm getting the sense. Okay, before we go, I want to ask each of you about another story that another former colleague, Alexi Casa from CalMatters, formerly The Chronicle, wrote about. Yes. And this is Gavin Newsom's, now I'm going to use air quotes, baseball career. You know, he's gotten a lot of mileage out of saying that he was recruited by Santa Clara and that it turned his life around. And, you know, Alexi did some reporting that showed, well, he actually maybe overstated that. He was never on any kind of the published rosters. He talked to some former coaches and teammates who kind of laughed at his own characterization. Heather, do you think, like, does that have any legs in terms of haunting Newsom?
Alexi's very good at haunting Newsom. He broke the French Laundry story.
That's right.
So
that one will haunt him, I'm sure. But what about this? Do you think, is this kind of like, you know, just, I mean, it's not exactly George Santos level embellishment, right?
Yeah. It's a fun, you know, story I think people love to hear about politicians who don't always live up to their word. Shocking, I know, embellish their histories. So I thought it was a good read.
Joe?
Newsom's biggest problems are often self-inflicted wounds, French laundry, this baseball thing. Going back to his mayoralship when he had an affair with his campaign manager's wife. These are the things that shape Newsom's opinion or image to many of us who have watched him for decades and will come up again in perhaps 2028.
When he will not be throwing out the first pitch as president if he ever gets elected.
Looking for another job, perhaps. But so, yeah, these are all self-inflicted wounds. And he didn't need to do that to say, you know, to embellish his baseball career. So,
yeah. Great. Well, it was a fun read, as Heather said. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Heather Knight from The New York Times, Joe Garofoli from the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And that is a wrap for Monday, April 8th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producers are Dana Cronin and Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.
Hi there. I'm Rund Abdelfattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.